remained merely a fearsome name, and an invisible, and therefore the more frightening, presence. The Emperor was the inside man with all the trappings and emoluments of power. Demerzel was the outside man, with nothing evident, not even a formal title, but with his fingers and mind probing everywhere, and asking for no reward for his tireless labors but one, the reality of power. It amused the Emperor in a macabre sort of way to consider that, at any moment, without warning, with a manufactured excuse, or with none at all, he could have Demerzel arrested, imprisoned, exiled, tortured, or executed. After all, in these annoying centuries of constant unrest, the Emperor might have difficulty in exerting his will over the various planets of the Empire, even over the various sectors of Trantor, with their rabble of local executives and legislatures that he was forced to deal with in a maze of interlocking decrees, protocols, commitments, treaties, and general interstellar legalities. But at least his powers remained absolute over the palace and its grounds. And yet Cleon knew that his dreams of power were useless. Demerzel had served his father, and Cleon could not remember a time when he did not turn to Demerzel for everything. It was Demerzel who knew it all, devised it all, did it all. More than that, it was on Demerzel that anything that went wrong could be blamed. The Emperor himself remained above criticism and had nothing to fear. Except, of course, palace coups and assassination by his nearest and dearest. It was to prevent this, above all, that he depended upon Demerzel. Emperor Cleon felt a tiny shudder at the thought of trying to do without Demerzel. There had been emperors who had ruled personally, who had had a series of chiefs of staff of no talent, who had had incompetence serving in the post and had kept them, and somehow they had gotten along for a time and after a fashion. But Cleon could not. He needed Demerzel. In fact, now that the thought of assassination had come to him, and in view of the modern history of the Empire, it was inevitable that it had come to him. He could see that getting rid of Demerzel was quite impossible. It couldn't be done. No matter how cleverly he, Cleon, would attempt to arrange it, Demerzel, he was sure, would anticipate the move somehow, would know it was on its way, and would arrange with far superior cleverness a palace coup. Cleon would be dead before Demerzel could possibly be taken away in chains, and there would simply be another emperor that Demerzel would serve and dominate. Or would Demerzel tire of the game and make himself emperor? Never. The habit of anonymity was too strong in him. If Demerzel exposed himself to the world, then his powers, his wisdom, his luck, whatever it was, would surely desert him. Cleon was convinced of that. He felt it to be beyond dispute. So, while he behaved himself, Cleon was safe. With no ambitions of his own, Demerzel would serve him faithfully. And now here was Demerzel, dressed so severely and simply that it made Cleon uneasily conscious of the useless ornamentation of his robes of state, now thankfully removed with the aid of two valets. Naturally, it would not be until he was alone and in dishabille that Demerzel would glide into view. "Demerzel," said the Emperor of all the galaxy, "I am tired."
"State functions are tiring, sire," murmured Demerzel.
"Then must I have them every evening?"
"Not every evening, but they are essential. It gratifies others to see you and to be taken note of by you. It helps keep the Empire running smoothly."
"The Empire used to be kept running smoothly by power," said the Emperor somberly. "Now it must be kept running by a smile, a wave of the hand, a murmured word, and a medal or a plaque."
If all that keeps the peace, sire, there is much to be said for it, and your reign proceeds well.
You know why, because I have you at my side. My only real gift is that I am aware of your importance.
He looked at Demerzel slyly.
My son need not be my heir. He is not a talented boy. What if I make you my heir?
Demerzel said freezingly, Sire, that is unthinkable. I would not usurp the throne. I would not steal it from your rightful heir. Besides, if I have displeased you, punish me justly. Surely nothing I have done or could possibly do deserves the punishment of being made emperor. Cleon laughed.
For that true assessment of the value of the imperial throne, Demerzel, I abandon any thought of punishing you. Come now, let us talk about something. I would sleep, but I am not yet ready for the ceremonies with which they put me to bed. Let us talk.
About what, sire?
About anything. About that mathematician and his psychohistory. I think about him every once in a while, you know. I thought of him at dinner tonight. I wondered, what if a psychohistorical analysis would predict a method for making it possible to be an emperor without endless ceremony?
I somehow think, sire, that even the cleverest psychohistorian could not manage that.
Well, tell me the latest. Is he still hiding among those peculiar bald heads of Mycogen? You promised you would winkle him out of there.
So I did, sire, and I moved in that direction. But I regret that I must say that I failed.
Failed?
The emperor allowed himself to frown.
I don't like that.
Nor I, sire. I plan to have the mathematician be encouraged to commit some blasphemous act. Such acts are easy to commit in Mycogen, especially for an outsider, one that would call for severe punishment. The mathematician would then be forced to appeal to the emperor, and as a result we would get him. I planned it at the cost of insignificant concessions on our part. Important to Mycogen, totally unimportant to us. And I meant to play no direct role in the arrangement. It was to be handled subtly.
I dare say, said Cleon, but it failed. Did the mayor of Mycogen?
He is called the High Elder, sire.
Do not quibble over titles. Did this High Elder refuse?
On the contrary, sire, he agreed. And the mathematician Selden fell into the trap neatly.
Well, then?
He was allowed to leave unharmed.
Why?
Said Cleon indignantly. Of this I am not certain, sire, but I suspect we were outbid.
By whom? By the mayor of Y?
Possibly, sire, but I doubt that. I have Y under constant surveillance. If they had gained the mathematician, I would know it by now. The emperor was not merely frowning. He was clearly enraged.
Demerzel, this is bad. I am greatly displeased. A failure like this makes me wonder if you are perhaps not the man you once were. What measure shall we take against Mycogen for this clear defiance of the emperor's wishes?
Demerzel bowed low in recognition of the storm unleashed, but he said in steely tones, It would be a mistake to move against Mycogen now, sire. The disruption that would follow would play into the hands of Y.
But we must do something.
Perhaps not, sire. It is not as bad as it may seem.
How can it be not as bad as it seems?
You'll remember, sire, that this mathematician was convinced that psychohistory was impractical.
Of course I remember that. But that doesn't matter, does it, for our purposes?
Perhaps not. But if it were to become practical, it would serve our purposes to an infinitely great extent, sire. And from what I have been able to find out, the mathematician is now attempting to make psychohistory practical. His blasphemous attempt in Mycogen was, I understand, part of an attempt at solving the problem of psychohistory. In that case, it may pay us, sire, to leave him to himself. It will serve us better to pick him up when he is closer to his goal, or has reached it.
Not if Y gets him first.
That, I shall see to it, will not happen.
In the same way that you succeeded in winkling the mathematician out of Mycogen just now?
I will not make a mistake the next time, sire, said Demerzel coldly. The Emperor said,
Demerzel, you had better not. I will not tolerate another mistake in this respect.
And then he added pettishly,
I think I shall not sleep tonight after all.
Girard Tissolver of the doll sector was short. The top of his head came up only to Harry Seldon's nose. He did not seem to take that to heart, however. He had handsome, even features, was given to smiling, and sported a thick, black mustache and crisply curling black hair. He lived with his wife and a half-grown daughter in an apartment of 7 small rooms, kept meticulously clean, but almost bare of furnishings. Tissolver said, I apologize, Master Seldon and Mistress Venabile, that I cannot give you the luxury to which you must be accustomed, but Dahl is a poor sector, and I am not even among the better off among our people.
The more reason, responded Seldon, that we must apologize to you for placing the burden of our presence upon you.
No burden, Master Seldon. Master Hummon has arranged to pay us generously for your use of our humble quarters, and the credits would be welcome even if you were not, and you are.
Seldon remembered Hummon's parting words when they finally arrived in Dahl.
Seldon, he had said, this is the third place I've arranged a sanctuary. The first two were notoriously beyond the reach of the Imperium, which might well have served to attract their attention. After all, they were logical places for you. This one is different. It is poor, unremarkable, and, as a matter of fact, unsafe in some ways. It is not a natural refuge for you, so that the Emperor and his chief of staff may not think to turn their eyes in this direction. Would you mind staying out of trouble this time, then?
I will try, Hummon, said Seldon, a little offended. Please be aware that the trouble is not of my seeking. I am trying to learn what may well take me 30 lifetimes to learn, if I am to have the slightest chance of organizing psychohistory.
I understand, said Hummon. Your efforts at learning brought you to Upperside in Streeling, and to the Elder's Eyrie in Mycogen, and to who can guess where in Dahl. As for you, Dr. Venabile, I know you've been trying to take care of Seldon, but you must try harder. Get it fixed in your head that he is the most important person on Trantor, or in the galaxy for that matter, and that he must be kept secure at any cost.
I will continue to do my best, said Dor stiffly.
And as for your host family, they have their peculiarities, but they are essentially good people with whom I have dealt before. Try not to get them in trouble either. But Tissolver, at least, did not seem to anticipate trouble of any kind from his new tenants, and his expressed pleasure at the company he now had, quite apart from the rent credits he would be getting, seemed quite sincere.
He had never been outside Dahl, and his appetite for tales of distant places was enormous. His wife, too, bowing and smiling, would listen, and their daughter, with a finger in her mouth, would allow one eye to peep from behind the door. It was usually after dinner, when the entire family assembled, that Selden and Doris were expected to talk of the outside world. The food was plentiful enough, but it was bland and often tough. So soon after the tangy food of Mycogen, it was all but inedible. The table was a long shelf against one wall, and they ate standing up. Gentle questioning by Selden elicited the fact that this was the usual situation among Dahlites as a whole, and was not due to unusual poverty. Of course, Mistress DeSolver explained, there were those with high government jobs in Dahl who were prone to adopt all kinds of effete customs, like chairs. She called them body shelves. But this was looked down upon by the solid middle class. Much as they disapproved of unnecessary luxury, though, the DeSolvers loved hearing about it, listening with a virtual storm of tongue-clicking when told of mattresses lifted on legs, of ornate chests and wardrobes, and of a superfluity of tableware. They listened also to a description of Mycogenian customs, while Gerard DeSolver stroked his own hair complacently, and made it quite obvious that he would as soon think of emasculation as of depilation. Mistress DeSolver was furious at any mention of female subservience, and flatly refused to believe that the sisters accepted it tranquilly. They seized most, however, on Selden's casual reference to the imperial grounds. When, upon questioning, it turned out that Selden had actually seen and spoken to the Emperor, a blanket of awe enveloped the family. It took a while before they dared ask questions, and Selden found that he could not satisfy them. He had not, after all, seen much of the grounds, and even less of the palace interior. That disappointed the DeSolvers, and they were unremitting in their attempts to elicit more. And, having heard of Selden's imperial adventure, they found it hard to believe Dora's assertion that, for her part, she had never been anywhere in the imperial grounds. Most of all, they rejected Selden's casual comment that the Emperor had talked and behaved very much as any ordinary human being would. That seemed utterly impossible to the DeSolvers. After three evenings of this, Selden found himself tiring. He had, at first, welcomed the chance to do nothing for a while, during the day at least, but view some of the history book films that Doris recommended. The DeSolvers turned over their book viewer to their guests during the day with good grace, though the little girl seemed unhappy and was sent over to a neighbor's apartment to use theirs for her homework. It doesn't help, Selden said restlessly in the security of his room after he had piped in some music to discourage eavesdropping. I can see your fascination with history, but it's all endless detail. It's a mountainous heap, no, a galactic heap, of data in which I can't see the basic organization. I dare say, said Doris, that there must have been a time when human beings saw no organization in the stars in the sky, but eventually they discovered the galactic structure. And I'm sure that took generations, not weeks. There must have been a time when physics seemed a mass of unrelated observations before the central natural laws were discovered, and that took generations. And what of the DeSolvers? What of them? I think they're being very nice. They're curious. Of course they are. Wouldn't you be if you were in their place? But is it just curiosity,
They seem to be ferociously interested in my meeting with the Emperor. Doris seemed impatient.
Again, it's only natural. Wouldn't you be if the situation was reversed?
It makes me nervous. Haman brought us here.
Yes, but he's not perfect. He brought me to the university, and I was maneuvered upperside.
He brought us to Sunmaster 14, who entrapped us. You know he did. Twice bitten, at least once shy. I'm tired of being questioned.
Then turn the tables, Harry. Aren't you interested in Dahl?
Of course.
What do you know about it, to begin with?
Nothing. It's just one of more than 800 sectors, and I've only been on Trantor a little over 2 years.
Exactly. And there are 25 million other worlds, and I've been on this problem only a little over 2 months.
I tell you, I want to go back to Helicon and take up a study of the mathematics of turbulence, which was my PhD problem, and forget I ever saw, or thought I saw, that turbulence gave an insight into human society.
But that evening he said to Tisalver, "But you know, Master Tisalver, you've never told me what you do, the nature of your work."
"Me?" Tisalver placed his fingers on his chest, which was covered by the simple white t-shirt with nothing underneath, which seemed to be the standard male uniform in Dahl.
"Nothing much. I work at the local Holovision station in programming. It's very dull, but it's a living."
"And it's respectable," said Mistress Tisalver. "It means he doesn't have to work in the heat sinks."
"The heat sinks?" said Doris, lifting her light eyebrows and managing to look fascinated.
"Oh, well," said Tisalver, "that's what Dahl is best known for. It isn't much, but 40 billion people on Trantor need energy, and we supply a lot of it. We don't get appreciated, but I'd like to see some of the fancy sectors do without it."
Selden looked confused. "Doesn't Trantor get its energy from solar power stations in orbit?"
"Some," said Tisalver, "and some from nuclear fusion stations out on the islands, and some from microfusion motors, and some from wind stations upperside. But half..."
He raised a finger in emphasis, and his face looked unusually grave.
"Half comes from the heat sinks. There are heat sinks in lots of places, but none as rich as those in Dahl."
"Are you serious that you don't know about the heat sinks? You sit there and stare at me."
Doris said quickly, "We are outworlders, you know."
She had almost said tribespeople, but had caught herself in time.
"Especially Dr. Selden. He's only been on Trantor a couple of months."
"Really?" said Mistress Tisalver.
She was a trifle shorter than her husband, was plump without quite being fat, had her dark hair drawn tightly back into a bun, and possessed rather beautiful dark eyes. Like her husband, she appeared to be in her 30s. After a period in Mycogen, not actually long in duration but intense, it struck Doris as odd to have a woman enter the conversation at will. How quickly modes and manners established themselves, she thought, and made a mental note to mention that to Selden. One more item for his psychohistory.
"Oh, yes," she said. "Dr. Selden is from Helicon."
Mistress Tisalver registered polite ignorance.
"And where might that be?"
Doris said,
"Why, it's..."
She turned to Selden.
"Where is it, Harry?"
Selden looked abashed. "To tell you the truth,"
I don't think I could locate it very easily on a galactic model without looking up the coordinates. All I can say is that it's on the other side of the central black hole from Trantor, and getting there by hypership is rather a chore.
Mistress DeSolver said,
I don't think Gerard and I will ever be on a hypership.
Someday, Cassilia, said DeSolver cheerfully, maybe we will. But tell us about Helicon, Master Selden.
Selden shook his head. To me, that would be dull. It's just a world like any other. Only Trantor is different from all the rest. There are no heat sinks on Helicon, or probably anywhere else except Trantor. Tell me about them.
Only Trantor is different from all the rest. The sentence repeated itself in Selden's mind, and for a moment he grasped at it. And for some reason, Dor's hand-on-thigh story suddenly recurred to him. But DeSolver was speaking, and it passed out of Selden's mind as quickly as it had entered. DeSolver said,
If you really want to know about heat sinks, I can show you.
He turned to his wife.
Cassilia, would you mind if tomorrow evening I take Master Selden to the heat sinks?
And me, said Doris quickly.
And Mistress Venabili.
Mistress DeSolver frowned and said sharply,
I don't think it would be a good idea. Our visitors would find it dull.
I don't think so, Mistress DeSolver, said Selden ingratiatingly. We would very much like to see the heat sinks. We would be delighted if you would join us too. And your little daughter, if she wants to come.
To the heat sinks? Said Mistress DeSolver, stiffening. It's no place at all for a decent woman.
Selden felt embarrassed at his gaffe. I meant no harm, Mistress DeSolver.
No offense, said DeSolver. Cassilia thinks it's beneath us, and so it is. But as long as I don't work there, it's no distress merely to visit and show it to guests. But it is uncomfortable, and I would never get Cassilia to dress properly.
They got up from their crouching positions. Dahlite chairs were merely molded plastic seats on small wheels, and they cramped Selden's knees terribly and seemed to wiggle at his least body movement. The DeSolvers, however, had mastered the art of sitting firmly, and rose without trouble, and without needing to use their arms for help, as Selden had to. Doris also got up without trouble, and Selden once again marveled at her natural grace. Before they parted to their separate rooms for the night, Selden said to Doris, Are you sure you know nothing about heat sinks? Mistress DeSolver makes them seem unpleasant.
They can't be that unpleasant, or DeSolver wouldn't suggest taking us on tour. Let's be content to be surprised.
63. DeSolver said, You'll need proper clothing. Mistress DeSolver sniffed markedly in the background. Cautiously, Selden, thinking of kirtles with vague distress, said, What do you mean by proper clothing?
Something light, such as I wear. A t-shirt, very short sleeves, loose slacks, loose underpants, foot socks, open sandals. I have it all for you.
Good. It doesn't sound bad.
As for Mistress Venabili, I have the same. I hope it fits.
The clothes DeSolver supplied each of them, which were his own, fit fine, if a bit snugly. When they were ready, they bade Mistress DeSolver goodbye, and she, with a resigned, if still disapproving air, watched them from the doorway as they set off. It was early evening, and there was an attractive twilight glow above.
It was clear that Dahl's lights would soon be winking on. The temperature was mild, and there were virtually no vehicles to be seen. Everyone was walking. In the distance was the ever-present hum of an expressway, and the occasional glitter of its lights could be easily seen. The Dahlites, Selden noted, did not seem to be walking toward any particular destination. Rather, there seemed to be a promenade going on, a walking for pleasure. Perhaps, if Dahl was an impoverished sector, as DeSalver had implied, inexpensive entertainment was at a premium. And what was as pleasant, and as inexpensive, as an evening stroll? Selden felt himself easing automatically into the gait of an aimless stroll himself, and felt the warmth of friendliness all around him. People greeted each other as they passed and exchanged a few words. Black mustaches of different shape and thickness flashed everywhere, and seemed a requisite for the Dahlite male, as ubiquitous as the bald heads of the Mycogenian brothers. It was an evening rite, a way of making sure that another day had passed safely, and that one's friends were still well and happy. And, it soon became apparent, Doris caught every eye. In the twilight glow, the ruddiness of her hair had deepened, but it stood out against the sea of black-haired heads, except for the occasional gray, like a gold coin winking its way across a pile of coal. "This is very pleasant," said Selden.
"It is," said DeSalver. "Ordinarily, I'd be walking with my wife, and she'd be in her element. There is no one for a kilometer around whom she doesn't know by name, occupation, and interrelationships. I can't do that. Right now, half the people who greet me, I couldn't tell you their names. But in any case, we mustn't creep along too slowly. We must get to the elevator. It's a busy world on the lower levels."
They were on the elevator going down when Doris said, "I presume, Master DeSalver, that the heat sinks are places where the internal heat of Trantor is being used to produce steam that will turn turbines and produce electricity."
"Oh, no. Highly efficient, large-scale thermopiles produce electricity directly. Don't ask me the details, please. I'm just a holovision programmer. In fact, don't ask anyone the details down there. The whole thing is one big black box. It works, but no one knows how."
"What if something goes wrong?"
"It doesn't, usually. But if it does, some expert comes over from somewhere. Someone who understands computers. The whole thing is highly computerized, of course."
The elevator came to a halt and they stepped out. A blast of heat struck them.
"It's hot," said Selden, quite unnecessarily.
"Yes, it is," said DeSalver. "That's what makes Dahl so valuable as an energy source. The magma layer is nearer the surface here than it is anywhere else in the world. So you have to work in the heat."
"How about air conditioning?" said Doris.
"There is air conditioning, but it's a matter of expense. We ventilate and dehumidify and cool. But if we go too far, then we're using up too much energy, and the whole process becomes too expensive."
DeSalver stopped at a door at which he signaled. It opened to a blast of cooler air, and he muttered,
"We ought to be able to get someone to help show us around, and he'll control the remarks that Mistress Venabili will otherwise be the victim of, at least from the men."
"Remarks won't embarrass me," said Doris.
"They will embarrass me," said DeSalver.
A young man walked out of the office and introduced himself as Haino Lindor. He resembled DeSalver quite closely, but Selden decided that until he got used to the almost universal shortness, swarthiness, black hair, and luxuriant mustaches, he would not be able to see individual differences easily. Lindor said, I'll be glad to show you around for what there is to see. It's not one of your spectaculars, you know. He addressed them all, but his eyes were fixed on Doors. He said, It's not going to be comfortable. I suggest we remove our shirts. It's nice and cool in here, said Selden. Of course, but that's because we're executives. Rank has its privileges. Out there, we can't maintain air conditioning at this level. That's why they get paid more than I do. In fact, those are the best-paying jobs in Dahl, which is the only reason we get people to work down here. Even so, it's getting harder to get heat sinkers all the time. He took a deep breath. Okay, out into the soup. He removed his own shirt and tucked it into his waistband. DeSalver did the same, and Selden followed suit. Lindor glanced at Doors and said, For your own comfort, mistress, but it's not compulsory. That's all right, said Doors, and removed her shirt. Her brassiere was white, unpadded, and showed considerable cleavage. Mistress, said Lindor, that's not... He thought a moment, then shrugged and said, All right, we'll get by. At first, Selden was aware only of computers and machinery, huge pipes, flickering lights, and flashing screens. The overall light was comparatively dim, though individual sections of machinery were illuminated. Selden looked up into the almost darkness. He said, Why isn't it better lit? It's lit well enough, where it should be, said Lindor. His voice was well modulated, and he spoke quickly, but a little harshly. Overall illumination is kept low for psychological reasons. Too bright is translated in the mind into heat. Complaints go up when we turn up the lights, even when the temperature is made to go down. Doris said, It seems to be well computerized. I should think the operations could be turned over to computers altogether. This sort of environment is made for artificial intelligence. Perfectly right, said Lindor. But neither can we take a chance on any failures. We need people on the spot if anything goes wrong. A misfunctioning computer can raise problems up to 2,000 kilometers away.
So can human error, isn't that so? Said Selden.
Oh, yes. But with both people and computers on the job, computer error can be more quickly tracked down and corrected by people. And conversely, human error can be more quickly corrected by computers. What it amounts to is that nothing serious can happen unless human error and computer error take place simultaneously, and that hardly ever happens.
Hardly ever, but not never, eh? Said Selden.
Almost never, but not never. Computers aren't what they used to be, and neither are people.
That's the way it always seems, said Selden, laughing slightly.
No, no, I'm not talking memory. I'm not talking good old days. I'm talking statistics.
At this, Selden recalled Hummond talking of the degeneration of the times.
See what I mean? Said Lindor, his voice dropping. There's a bunch of people at the C3 level, from the looks of them, drinking. Not one of them is at his or her post.
What are they drinking? Asked Doors.
Special fluids for replacing electrolyte loss. Fruit juice.
You can't blame them, can you? Said Doris indignantly. In this dry heat, you would have to drink.
Do you know how long a skilled C3 can spin out a drink? And there's nothing to be done about it either. If we give them 5-minute breaks for drinks and stagger them so they don't all congregate in a group,
You simply stir up a rebellion.
They were approaching the group now. There were men and women. Dahl seemed to be a more or less amphisexual society, and both sexes were shirtless. The women wore devices that might be called brassieres, but they were strictly functional. They served to lift the breasts in order to improve ventilation and limit perspiration, but covered nothing. Doris said in an aside to Selden,
"That makes sense, Harry. I'm soaking wet there."
"Take off your brassiere, then," said Selden. "I won't lift a finger to stop you."
"Somehow," said Doris, "I guessed you wouldn't."
She left her brassiere where it was. They were approaching the congregation of people, about a dozen of them. Doris said,
"If any of them make rude remarks, I shall survive."
"Thank you," said Lindor. "I cannot promise they won't, but I'll have to introduce you. If they get the idea that you two are inspectors and in my company, they'll become unruly. Inspectors are supposed to poke around on their own without anyone from management overseeing them."
He held up his arms.
"Heat sinkers, I have two introductions to make. We have visitors from outside, two outworlders, two scholars. They've got worlds running short on energy, and they've come here to see how we do it here in Dahl. They think they may learn something."
"They'll learn how to sweat," shouted a heatsinker, and there was raucous laughter.
"She's got a sweaty chest right now," shouted a woman, "covering up like that."
Doris shouted back,
"I'd take it off, but mine can't compete with yours."
The laughter turned good-natured. But one young man stepped forward, staring at Selden with intense, deep-set eyes, his face set into a humorless mask. He said,
"I know you. You're the mathematician."
He ran forward, inspecting Selden's face with eager solemnity. Automatically, Doris stepped in front of Selden, and Lindor stepped in front of her, shouting,
"Back, heatsinker. Mind your manners."
Selden said, "Wait, let him talk to me. Why is everyone piling in front of me?" Lindor said in a low voice,
"If any of them get close, you'll find they don't smell like hothouse flowers."
"I'll endure it," said Selden brusquely. "Young man, what is it you want?"
"My name is Amaryl. You go, Amaryl. I've seen you on Holovision."
"You might have, but what about it?"
"I don't remember your name."
"You don't have to."
"You talked about something called psychohistory."
"You don't know how I wish I hadn't."
"What?"
"Nothing. What is it you want?"
"I want to talk to you, just for a little while, now."
Selden looked at Lindor, who shook his head firmly.
"Not while he's on his shift."
Selden looked at Lindor, who shook his head firmly.
"Not while he's on his shift."
"When does your shift begin, Mr. Amaryl?" asked Selden.
1600.
"Can you see me tomorrow at 1400?
"Sure. Where?"
Selden turned to Tisalver. "Would you permit me to see him in your place?" Tisalver looked very unhappy.
"It's not necessary. He's just a heatsinker."
Selden said, "He recognized my face. He knows something about me. He can't be just an anything. I'll see him in my room." And then, as DeSalver's face didn't soften, he added, "My room, for which rent is being paid, and you'll be at work out of the apartment." DeSalver said in a low voice,
"It's not me, Master Selden. It's my wife, Cassilia. She won't stand for it."
"I'll talk to her," said Selden grimly. "She'll have to." 64.
Cassilia Tisalver opened her eyes wide.
A heat sinker? Not in my apartment.
Why not? Besides, he'll be coming to my room, said Selden, at 1400.
I won't have it, said Mistress Tisalver. This is what comes of going down to the heat sinks. Gerard was a fool.
Not at all, Mistress Tisalver. We went at my request, and I was fascinated. I must see this young man, since that is necessary to my scholarly work.
I'm sorry if it is, but I won't have it.
Doris Van Abbeley raised her hand.
Harry, let me take care of this.
Mistress Tisalver, if Dr. Selden must see someone in his room this afternoon, the additional person naturally means additional rent. We understand that. For today, then, the rent on Dr. Selden's room will be doubled.
Mistress Tisalver thought about it.
Well, that's decent of you, but it's not only the credits. There's the neighbors to think of. A sweaty, smelly heat sinker.
I doubt that he'll be sweaty and smelly at 1400, Mistress Tisalver, but let me go on. Since Dr. Selden must see him, then if he can't see him here, he'll have to see him elsewhere. But we can't run here and there. That would be too inconvenient. Therefore, what we will have to do is to get a room elsewhere. It won't be easy, and we don't want to do it, but we will have to. So we will pay the rent through today and leave, and, of course, we will have to explain to Master Hummin why we have had to change the arrangements that he so kindly made for us.
Wait!
Mistress Tisalver's face became a study of calculation.
We wouldn't like to disoblige Master Hummin, or you two. How long would this creature have to stay?
He's coming at 1400. He must be at work at 1600. He will be here for less than 2 hours, perhaps considerably less. We will meet him outside, the two of us, and bring him to Dr. Selden's room. Any neighbors who see us will think he is an outworlder friend of ours.
Mistress Tisalver nodded her head.
Then let it be as you say. Double rent for Master Selden's room for today, and the heat sinker will visit just this one time.
Just this one time, said Doris.
But later, when Selden and Doris were sitting in her room, Doris said,
Why do you have to see him, Harry? Is interviewing a heat sinker important to psychohistory, too?
Selden thought he detected a small edge of sarcasm in her voice, and he said tartly, I don't have to base everything on this huge project of mine, in which I have very little faith anyway. I am also a human being with human curiosities. We were down in the heat sinks for hours, and you saw what the working people there were like. They were obviously uneducated. They were low-level individuals, no play on words intended, and yet here was one who recognized me. He must have seen me on holovision on the occasion of the decennial convention, and he remembered the word psychohistory. He strikes me as unusual, as out of place somehow, and I would like to talk to him.
Because it pleases your vanity to have become known even to heat-sinkers in Dahl?
Well, perhaps, but it also piques my curiosity.
And how do you know he hasn't been briefed and intends to lead you into trouble as has happened before?
Selden winced. I won't let him run his fingers through my hair. In any case, we're more nearly prepared now, aren't we? And I'm sure you'll be with me. I mean, you let me go upper side alone. You let me go with Raindrop 43 to the microfarms alone. And you're not going to do that again, are you?
You can be absolutely sure I won't, said Doris.
Well then, I'll talk to the young man, and you can watch out for traps. I have every faith in you.
65.
Emeril arrived a few minutes before 1400, looking warily about. His hair was neat, and his thick mustache was combed and turned up slightly at the edges. His T-shirt was startlingly white. He did smell, but it was a fruity odor that undoubtedly came from the slightly over-enthusiastic use of scent. He had a bag with him. Selden, who had been waiting outside for him, seized one elbow lightly, while Doris seized the other, and they moved rapidly into the elevator. Having reached the correct level, they passed through the apartment into Selden's room. Emeril said in a low, hangdog voice, "Nobody home, huh?" "Everyone's busy," said Selden neutrally. He indicated the only chair in the room, a pad directly on the floor. "No," said Emeril. "I don't need that. One of you two use it." He squatted on the floor with a graceful downward motion. Doris imitated the movement, sitting on the edge of Selden's floor-based mattress. But Selden dropped down rather clumsily, having to make use of his hands and unable quite to find a comfortable position for his legs. Selden said, "Well, young man, why do you want to see me?"
"Because you're a mathematician. You're the first mathematician I ever saw close up, so I could touch him, you know."
"Mathematicians feel like anyone else."
"Not to me, Dr. Selden."
"That's my name." Emeril looked pleased.
"I finally remembered. You see, I want to be a mathematician, too."
"Very good. What's stopping you?" Emeril suddenly frowned.
"Are you serious?"
"I presume something is stopping you. Yes, I'm serious."
"What's stopping me is I'm a Dahlite, a heat sinker on Dahl. I don't have the money to get an education, and I can't get the credits to get an education. A real education, I mean. All they taught me was to read and cipher and use a computer, and then I knew enough to be a heat sinker. But I wanted more, so I taught myself."
"In some ways, that's the best kind of teaching. How did you do that?"
"I knew a librarian. She was willing to help me. She was a very nice woman, and she showed me how to use computers for learning mathematics. And she set up a software system that would connect me with other libraries. I'd come on my days off and on mornings after my shift. Sometimes she'd lock me in her private room so I wouldn't be bothered by people coming in, or she would let me in when the library was closed. She didn't know mathematics herself, but she helped me all she could. She was oldish, a widow lady. Maybe she thought of me as a kind of son or something. She didn't have children of her own."
Maybe, thought Selden briefly, there was some other emotion involved too, but he put the thought away. None of his business.
"I liked number theory," said Emeril. "I worked some things out from what I learned from the computer and from the book films it used to teach me mathematics. I came up with some new things that weren't in the book films."
Selden raised his eyebrows. "That's interesting. Like what?"
"I've brought some of them to you. I've never showed them to anyone. The people around me..."
He shrugged.
"They'd either laugh or be annoyed. Once I tried to tell a girl I knew, but she just said I was weird and wouldn't see me anymore. Is it all right for me to show them to you?"
"Quite all right, believe me." Selden held out his hand, and after a brief hesitation, Emeril handed him the bag he was carrying. For a long time, Selden looked over Emeril's papers. The work was naive in the extreme, but he allowed no smile to cross his face. He followed the demonstrations, not one of which was new, of course, or even nearly new, or of any importance. But that didn't matter. Selden looked up.
Did you do all of this yourself? Emeril, looking more than half frightened, nodded his head. Selden extracted several sheets. What made you think of this? His finger ran down a line of mathematical reasoning. Emeril looked it over, frowned, and thought about it. Then he explained his line of thinking. Selden listened and said, Did you ever read a book by Annette Bigel?
On number theory?
The title was Mathematical Deduction. It wasn't about number theory particularly. Emeril shook his head.
I never heard of him. I'm sorry.
He worked out this theorem of yours 300 years ago. Emeril looked stricken.
I didn't know that.
I'm sure you didn't. You did it more cleverly, though. It's not rigorous, but...
What do you mean, rigorous?
It doesn't matter. Selden put the papers back together in a sheaf, restored it to the bag, and said, Make several copies of all this. Take one copy, have it dated by an official computer, and place it under computerized seal. My friend here, Mistress Venabili, can get you into Streeling University, without tuition, on some sort of scholarship. You'll have to start at the beginning and take courses in other subjects than mathematics, but... By now, Emeril had caught his breath.
Into Streeling University? They won't take me.
Why not? Doris, you can arrange it, can't you?
I'm sure I can.
No, you can't, said Emeril hotly. They won't take me. I'm from Dahl.
Well?
They won't take people from Dahl. Selden looked at Doris. What's he talking about? Doris shook her head.
I really don't know.
Emeril said, You're an outworlder, mistress. How long have you been at Streeling?
A little over 2 years, Mr. Emeril.
Have you ever seen Dahlites there? Short, curly black hair, big mustaches?
There are students with all kinds of appearances.
But no Dahlites. Look again the next time you're there.
Why not? Said Selden.
They don't like us. We look different. They don't like our mustaches.
You can shave your...
But Selden's voice died under the other's furious glance.
Never. Why should I? My mustache is my manhood.
You shave your beard. That's your manhood, too.
To my people, it is the mustache.
Selden looked at Doris again and murmured, Bald heads, mustaches, madness.
What?
Said Emeril angrily.
Nothing. Tell me what else they don't like about Dahlites. They make up things not to like. They say we smell. They say we're dirty. They say we steal. They say we're violent. They say we're dumb.
Why do they say all this?
Because it's easy to say it, and it makes them feel good. Sure. If we work in the heat sinks, we get dirty and smelly. If we're poor and held down, some of us steal and get violent. But that isn't the way it is with all of us. How about those tall yellow hairs in the Imperial sector who think they own the galaxy? No, they do own the galaxy. Don't they ever get violent? Don't they steal sometimes? If they did my job, they'd smell the way I do. If they had to live the way I have to, they'd get dirty too.
Who denies that there are people of all kinds in all places? Said Selden.
No one argues the matter. They just take it for granted. Master Selden, I've got to get away from Trantor. I have no chance on Trantor. No way of earning credits. No way of getting an education. No way of becoming a mathematician. no way of becoming anything but what they say I am, a worthless nothing.
This last was said in frustration and desperation. Selden tried to be reasonable.